listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
It's Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN at 92.5. We'll go straight out to the HR&P guest line. Joining us now, Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter. Thanks so much, Jeremy, for tuning in. Great name, by the way. Zach Cunningham, released by the Houston Texans today. Surprise level? Another sign that the Texans are, you know, laughingstock in the NFL?
Yeah, well, it's not too much of a surprise, just considering some of the issues that were coming out of Houston with him. You know, you saw the reports over the weekend that he was either missing meetings or not showing up for COVID tests. And so that's usually, a snowball effect. Once that happens, teams just figure, let's cut bait. You know, we're not going to win a championship this year anyways. Zach Cunningham was a previous regime guy. He was given money from another staff. And so, yeah, they just didn't see it as being worth it. I'm not going to say his last name right. Gruguet Hill has played really well at the linebacker spot. So, you know, he seems to be more of a future option for them there than Zach Cunningham would be.
Overall, Jeremy, we always ask from a national perspective because we deal with the minutiae on a daily basis. Have the Texans done anything to climb out from the laughingstock reputation that they have across the league? Because we all felt like we were getting out from under it when Bill O'Brien was fired, but then Jack Easterby hung around. And then Jack Easterby seemed to be his own black cloud that kind of deterred people from wanting to be positive about the Texans. And now you see this this season from hell and everything that's gone with it. I'm interested in your perspective from the outside looking in.
Well, I think the on-field production has honestly probably been a little better than I thought. My expectations were very low based on the roster. You know, it was amazing to me in free agency how they just set up a series of one-year, maybe two-year deals at anywhere from $3 to $4 million, signing like 20-plus players. I think just because they knew they had to just get some competition in the building. It was sort of that dire based on the roster. And so I think at times they've been a little better than what I thought, even though they said they were two wins. You know, to beat Tennessee was pretty good, all things considered. And so, you know, I wouldn't go as far as to say it's a laughing stock. I mean, every organization has its internal dysfunction. You know, ever since those stuff went down with Jack Easterby, the Texans have been pretty quiet about all that, just trying to go about their business. It's clear that because of Deshaun Watson's problems with Houston, that there's maybe some discord with ownership and players. That's something that they'll have to try to smooth out over time and get on the same page and have some more synergy as an organization, from the executive level to ownership to players, have it all make sense. That's really the key for the successful team.
Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter, our guest on the HR&P guest line. And look, I mean, the Texans, it's going to take some time to build a roster that's competitive. It's going to take Caserio some time to get all of his pieces in place. We see in the NFL all the time rebuilds, and rebuilds can happen pretty quickly in the NFL. It's an 8-8 league, now 9-8 or 8-9 league, however you want to look at it. Parity is built in the NFL. How long do you think it could take before the Texans have a roster where maybe you're in contention for the wild card in the AFC?
Well, I think really the NFL today is set up for parity. So you can, in 2 years or less, you can be pretty good depending on how you shake it. And it's going to depend on the Deshaun Watson deal if they can get that done. You know, if they can get what they want, which is the 3 first-round picks and more. That sets Nick Caserio up for success right off the bat if he can do that. And, you have this draft to try to locate a quarterback. It's considered a weak class, and so if they're drafting, say, second overall, that might be a stretch to go quarterback there, but they can potentially trade back and do some damage there. You know, but really it's just they have to just try to acquire talent however they can. It's much bigger than the quarterback spot, even though they need one. They have to get better along the lines. Really the offensive line, they have some talent there already, but they've been either beat up or haven't been cohesive, so they got to get healthier. I don't think they're going to be that far away a year or two from now, because if you want to get aggressive, and we saw with New England, right, their roster wasn't very good in 2020, but they spent a lot of money in free agency to try to get improved, and then they struck it right with Mac Jones at quarterback in the draft. Like, all of a sudden, you're not that far away.
Jeremy, obviously you follow the league on a daily basis, and you're an expert, and we talk about this all the time in terms of with your coverage on the East Coast with the Patriots and otherwise. Last year was Tom Brady's year. This year it seems like, and you mentioned Mac Jones, it's the year of Belichick. I now see that the leading matchup for the Super Bowl at 10% is Patriots-Buccaneers. With everything that has happened and all the parity in the league, are the Patriots a Super Bowl caliber team?
I'm not really ready to go that far yet. I need to see a little more. I think the defense is Super Bowl caliber, and you saw it the other night. I mean, they were betting on it being a 14-10 game, essentially, knowing they just needed the one touchdown and a few field goals. But they didn't trust Buffalo to score. And so that was impressive. I think they have the pieces there to potentially make that happen. You know, on offense, I don't know. I just don't know if they have the vertical vertical ability at receiver. I know they have some nice pieces, but do they have enough to, when you need to throw the ball in a tight playoff game against a good offense, can you put up 30 points? I mean, maybe Mac Jones can answer that. But right now, he's been a function of getting the ball out quickly, making the right decisions, accuracy, all those things that he's good at. You know, but can a team force him to have to throw the ball 40 times? And can they win that way? I just don't know yet. So I'm not going to go there yet. They're certainly a good playoff team. I can see them making some noise in the playoffs. I'm not ready to say Super Bowl yet.
Who do you like in the AFC?
You know, I still like the Chiefs, funny enough. I know that, I don't know, Buffalo's tough because I was going that direction about a month ago thinking they would be the team. I'm not off that bandwagon yet, but, you know, they're just, I don't know, it just might not be their year the way things are shaping up. You know, they got to go to Tampa. And they could fall to 7-6. Got to play New England again. Like, they just need to get in the playoffs at this point instead of getting like a high seed. So, you know, Kansas City, that defense has been really good lately. I know Mahomes hasn't been the same this year, but they still have enough weapons on offense to make something happen. And you know, the defense is shutting people out the way they played Denver there, and that was pretty impressive. So I'm going to go Kansas City.
I'm with you, too. I mean, the defense is looking a lot better. The offense still has a high ceiling. I'm not quitting on Buffalo either. I actually played a future on Buffalo after they lost to New England because I thought the value was good. It's interesting when you look at the AFC because it's wide open. I feel like the NFC is wide open, too, but you have better quality teams where, like, the top four or five teams in the NFC are all Super Bowl contenders. Is there anybody in the top of the NFC that you love? Is there somebody that you feel like is in the top of the NFC that maybe is a pretender?
Did you say in the NFC?
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, so let's see. We got who would be a pretender? I mean, the problem is all five of those teams at the top,
Cowboys,
could win a championship. Yeah, I won't say pretender. I'll say there are two teams near the top that I need a little more selling on. I would say Arizona and Dallas. You know, I think. Talking to people around the league, they say Dallas is certainly a playoff team, a good team, but maybe not on the same level as the Bucs and the Packers. So they're probably somewhere in that 3-5 range, and that's probably about right based on their record. You know, they can get hot and score on some people, and the defense is certainly much improved, but you still see those kind of curious performances where they just don't have enough. You know, pass rush kind of comes and goes. So we'll see. You know, they're getting DeMarcus Lawrence back healthy. They're getting Randy Gregory back, so... If they have a full arsenal, maybe they'll be proven wrong. And, you know, Arizona's fascinating because last year they fell apart toward the end. I think some execs around the league kind of thought, well, that's what you get with, like, an air raid offense. And, you know, maybe it doesn't breed toughness and you're just not good enough. Well, this year is a little different because they have so much talent. And Cliff Kingsbury has obviously done a very good job this year kind of increasing their toughness level with the acquisitions they got with GMC Kime and, you know, J.J. Watt and Rodney Hudson and the new pieces, A.J. Green, coupled with the weapons they already have, Zach Ertz. So, I mean, they're pretty loaded up. But I think people are still waiting to see with them. They want to see if they can sustain it in the playoffs. Now we know they're going to get in. You know, are they going to fold or are they going to be able to stay strong and make a run?
All right, Jeremy, I got a fun one for you because when it started with COVID and all the different remote, and you've been doing a lot, you were doing a lot of remotes for access on ESPN. How much thought went into your background? Because I've noticed sometimes there's that window behind you, and I don't know, I see some greenery. I hope someone wasn't doing construction at some time. But I know some guys like Desmond Howard and otherwise, they put up their favorite album. Louis Riddick puts up the old Mattel handheld video game. How much thought did you put into what your background was going to be when you were doing those remote shots?
Well, really, I would love to do that stuff. Actually, mine's pretty. Mine's not as decorative as some others. I have some cool backdrops of some patents that my wife got me for a Christmas. They're like patent replicas of like a baseball or of a golf ball, a basketball, and a football. So it's a good little background. But I like the cluttered desk, you know, where you have a bunch of different items put together and books. And I just don't have that kind of setup in my house. So you have to have like a good office space. And, you know, the dresser drawer in the background, I just don't have that. Mine's my setup's in my basement, sort of in the dark. So I just have to make do best I can.
If you had one album, one book, and one helmet to put behind you, what would it be?
One album, one book.
And one helmet.
Well, one helmet. Let's see. I went to Florida, University of Florida, so maybe I'd just put a Gators helmet on there.
Okay.
I would pick like a small, obscure college. It would be kind of fun. Let's see, book. You know, I just read the Patriots book from my guy, Seth Wickersham. It was really good. So why don't we put that up there? And then album, I'd go something classic, maybe like a Jay-Z Volume 2, In My Lifetime, something like that.
I like it. Didn't see that coming. That's outstanding.
Yeah. Jeremy, thanks so much for joining us. Great stuff as always. Continue the great work. Hope to catch up again in the future.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
You got it. Jeremy Fowler, ESPN senior NFL reporter. Talking about the top of the AFC and the NFC. Curious your thoughts on a couple of the teams that he said. And what are our thoughts? Whose stock is up? Whose stock is down in each conference? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, look, I've been telling you about Doc Linville. I will continue to tell you about Doc Linville because it's a game changer. Doc Linville is the expert in neo-grafting your hair to get your hairline back or replace your bald spots with real hair that's your hair. And it's an unbelievable process. The technology is fantastic. He has the best people to do it in the country. They used to travel all around. Now they're all here in Houston working for him. And seriously, he did it for me in late September. You're supposed to wait 6 to 9 months to see the end result, but I already see the results on a daily basis that the hairs are there. They're growing. I've got my old hairline back. He said the procedure done twice himself in different areas of his head, and now he has a full head of hair. You need to see what he can do for you because it gets your self-confidence back, your professional and personal appearance. You feel younger, you feel better, and you love what he can do for you. All you got to do is go to 975hair.com. And the reason why I tell you to do that is ESPN listeners get a free consultation that normally costs $150. You sit down with him and his staff. You ask all the questions. They tell you how it works, and you see if it's something you want to do. If you do, I'm telling you, it's not sprays and foams and vitamins. It's seriously taking your hair where you have a ton and putting it where you don't have any and giving you a whole new appearance and a whole new outlook on life. It's fantastic. It's the process is painless, literally, for me. It's easy. It took me a half a day. The next day, I was out and about and doing everything that I normally would be doing, and it could be the right thing for you, too. But again, it costs you nothing to have the consultation. Go to 975hair.com and check out my man, Doc Linville, today.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So, Jeremy Fowler doesn't think that the Patriots are not ready to crown them as a Super Bowl contender yet.
Interesting, because he is a Patriots guy. Along the way, he covered the Patriots quite closely for a while. He mentioned Seth Wickersham's book on the Patriots, too. I mean, to me, I'm with him. You know what? For all that they've accomplished so far, this is like the Cinderella bounce-back story for Belichick after what happened last year. It couldn't have been any worse for him to have the divorce and then have Brady win it all. And then everybody started the hype at the start of the year, which I thought was ludicrous, that the Super Bowl could end up being Patriots and Bucks in year two. And I'm like, the Patriots aren't good enough. Bucks obviously are. But now when you look at it, you say, look, in the regular season so far, they have. But as you mentioned in a previous segment on other topics and even with Fowler, it's a 17-game season. We're far from over. So as good as they've been, It was interesting to me. They beat a good Bills team, but they beat them because the elements, as much as anything else, played a factor. If they played them on a neutral field, or if they played them when it mattered most, would it be the same outcome? Those are questions I have, because I agree with them. Look, they spent all their money on defense. We knew that, and it's worked out for them. Mac Jones has worked out way better than anyone could have ever expected in year one. But do they have enough weapons so that when the playoffs roll around, when one thing isn't working, they can go something else? When they have one option cut off, could they go to another player? I don't think so. But the AFC's so wide open, you can't rule them out.
See, I think that's the thing, is the fact that the AFC's wide open. Like, if you're talking about getting to the Super Bowl, that's a lot different conversation than winning the Super Bowl.
Sure.
I could see the Patriots going through the gauntlet of the AFC and coming out on top. Like, Kansas City's still the team that I think has the most upside because their defense is playing well.
More.
And we know what their offense can do. We've seen it in the past. We've seen Mahomes look like the best quarterback in the world at times. Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce are still there. Edwards-Helaire trying to get healthy and come back and help that offense a little bit too. Like, you expect Kansas City to get back to close to where they were offensively. And the fact that they look good defensively now, that team by far has the highest ceiling. But the fact that they're not playing well, like, it does kind of open up the AFC to where you can get through it. Somebody can upset Kansas City.
But honestly, who's playing well, right? You look at it, Ravens aren't playing well.
No,
Bills
really
aren't playing well. So, and the thing is, you don't want to peak too soon. You want to peak at the right time. So there's still multiple weeks left where the Chargers can get right. I mean, the Chiefs can get right. The biggest thing for me with the Chiefs is no injuries, right? All these other teams like Baltimore with that laundry list of injuries, that they're not coming back from those, right? They just got to deal with what they have. They have Hollywood Brown, they have a tight end, and they have Lamar Jackson offensively, and they don't have anything else. So you look at that and go, Bills could get right, but they have a ton of weapons, but you still got to see the right Josh Allen at the right time. The one thing about Kansas City, you know, you have an MVP quarterback. You have a boatload of receivers. You have a bolstered up offensive line. You're getting healthier at running back, and you don't have any of those guys with the problems that they have injury related where you've lost them for the year. And the biggest question mark we had going into the year and throughout the year was Kansas City's defense. Now they're playing at a different level in the right direction. So that's the team that has the most possibilities for me with a high ceiling to get back where we thought they'd be.
Every team in the NFL has holes. It seems like the teams that are in contention in the AFC have more holes than the teams in the NFC. The Patriots, who beat the Bills, by the way, this past week, as you all know, Monday Night Football, we always have fun with Bill Belichick and his post-game sound, where he sounds like he's having all the fun in the world. Well, there's a little behind the scenes coming from that victory. Bill Belichick in the locker room after the game was incredibly excited.
Just two quick things for me, and then I'm going to turn it over to our orator. That's why we practice in this.
Did he say our owner or our order?
I couldn't figure out what he said.
I couldn't either. I'm pretty sure he said order, but I believe that like the order is probably like the leadership council, like somebody like that. Maybe. I don't know. Or maybe just like the order of operations.
Team captains. Or...
Yeah, I couldn't figure it out. But that was Bill Belichick behind
the scenes.
Where was
Jack Easterby to pull in the guys that are the team order?
Bill Belichick's happy that he's gone. Yeah. He's happy that he's away from Foxborough and is down south where Patriots South
remember
is
now,
at.
Bill said he's a heck of a guy and played a role, but was never football operations related.
See, that's the thing
for
with
Mr.
Like,
Easterby.
I think Easterby could have like serve a role in an organization. It's just
as the minister of positive thinking
and
team chaplain. Yeah,
he was a good team. I mean, I don't know if he was a good team chaplain, but he was a team chaplain in New England. He was a team chaplain in Kansas City when they had the suicide thing.
We created the narrative that would have a different meaning to this, he could be the minister of note cards, except for this year with note cards, with the press conferences and the way everybody's not on the same page, it wouldn't be the same as when he left those positive Stuart Smalley thoughts in everybody's lockers when you read about what he did in the past.
Exactly. How about the NFC? We just talked about how more teams in the AFC have holes than teams in the NFC. Like, you could just go through the top four of the top five and you say, like, if I told you that any of the top four or five could win the Super Bowl, I think you'd say, okay. Like, yeah. Arizona, I could see winning the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. I could see Green Bay winning the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. Tampa Bay just won the latest Super Bowl. I could see them repeating. I could see the Rams winning the Super Bowl, although they need to start playing better. Maybe the Jacksonville game was their get-right game. Where I draw the line is Dallas. I don't feel like Dallas is playing at a high... And I thought earlier that Dallas could win a game or two in the playoffs. I'm not seeing it right now. Dak's not playing his best football. I'm not sure Ezekiel Elliott's the best running back that they have in that backfield.
Not.
And the offensive line has some concerns, too, in Dallas.
Yeah, no question. And you know what? They had scapegoats throughout the year with injuries. and you know, and guys being out, and Dak missed two games, and Zeke is just not Zeke, and it's the knee, it's this, it's that. You're right, he's not the best running back on the roster. They got a hard decision to face in the offseason because he may never be the guy that they always thought he was going to be for many years when they gave him way too much money too early. But yeah, then the offensive line got dinged up, and you're like, oh, Collins this, and oh, you know, they're going to be okay when that. No. I think that there's a lot of holes. You got your owner and general manager coming out making excuses for your quarterback now and blaming it on the wide receivers. You got a horrible head coach. Yes, you got your defense right with a good defensive coordinator, but and you got a good offensive coordinator. But no one's on the same page there. There's just too much chaos at this point in the season for the Cowboys for me to be believers. Now, I'm going to tell you this. I believe Arizona can still be there, but I believe that they've got to prove that they've been there, done that. They got a lot of guys that have a lot of talent, but a lot of guys that have fallen short when you talk about their best players, because from the standpoint of A.J. Green, never been too far in the playoffs, and the Texans a main reason. DeAndre Hopkins, you know what? We all know they've never been where they needed to go, right? Kyler Murray still hasn't been there on that stage to do those kind of things. They need to prove that they're ready for prime time, right? And they're scheduled down the stretch. I think they got the Rams twice, so it's going to get tough. If I tell you, right now, this is your last five games of the regular season, and you're one of those five teams. How are you feeling? Bears, Ravens, Browns, Vikings, Lions.
I mean, 4-1's in play.
That's Green Bay. Yeah. 9-3 right now and could win four of their last five. They're second right now in the NFC, and the reason why I bring that up is home field advantage is not more important to any other team in the NFC, and the only way the Packers get to the Super Bowl if it goes through Lambeau. I think they still have holes. They're still waiting on a lot of guys to get healthy, but they're getting guys back that are all pro caliber. Jair Alexander's practicing today. Bakhtiari, one of the best left tackles in football, should be back in a week or two. Smith, their pass rusher, could come back. Za'Darius Smith the next 2 weeks. They could get better. But they can't go to Tampa and win. I don't believe they can go to Arizona a second time and win. But if those two teams have to come through Green Bay, they have a chance to win.
The one seed two this year, you could argue, is the most important year to have the top seed in the conference because it's the only one that gets a bye, right?
Yep.
Now that you have seven teams making to the playoffs, only the top seed gets the bye. And if it's Green Bay, like, it carries more weight, too, because you have to go to the frozen tundra if it is indeed frozen. Whereas if it's Arizona, it's nice to play at home, but climate control.
Right.
Like, is it a tougher road environment whenever you go into a climate-controlled dome, or is it a worse road environment when you go to a place that's frigid,
cold? It's more important for Arizona than any other team, because the one thing that Tampa has going for them is some of their best players have played in cold weather. Brady proved it last year when he went to Lambeau. Antonio Brown has played in cold weather before. Gronk has played in cold weather before. So they've got guys that can – it's not that big of a deal for them. Whereas Arizona, for the most part, with the exception of A.J. Green, everybody's been climate-controlled for the most part. Or in warm weather cities, even Jones, one of their best pass rushers. So that's where you got to start looking at it going, home field makes more of a difference to certain teams than others. We saw what happened Monday Night Football, how the elements can play a part in that. That's where I think it's going to be so vital down the stretch for teams fighting for it. I also think, and I'm interested in your opinion, rust versus rest.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I don't think Green Bay is a team that should have a week off because I think they relax too much when they have a week off unless they have injuries. I think some teams with injuries would need it. Other teams, I'd be worried about them being rusty if they have a week off.
I'll take the week off. That does come into play. You have to worry about it. You have to worry about the rust, but I'll take the trade-off of it just to avoid injury, to be honest with you. Like, I don't want to put my players through 65, 70 plays of an NFL game and all of a sudden Aaron Rodgers breaks the other toe and he's out for the postseason. That's to me is why I'll always take the bye. Jerry Jones was on 105.3 The Fan talking about Dak Prescott, and he was asked the question, is Dak healthy?
The thing that you're seeing is sometimes the pass that looks errant is because the receiver, for instance, ran the route two yards shorter. Mm. He should be out two more yards before he makes his cuts. It can make all the difference in the world as far as in the world his ability to separate. It has a relativeness to the other receivers.
What a weird answer to respond whenever you're asked the question, is Dak Prescott healthy? He was defending his quarterback, obviously, but kind of defensive there in response to the question.
I think that certain things are left unsaid, better left unsaid. And I think that when we talked about how Jerry has access and insists on being a part of all the football operations and the coaches' meetings and all those other things, I think that's one of those things he picked up along the way when he caught certain parts of a discussion that was probably a little over his head, football related, but he decided to air it out. That's another issue why the Cowboys have things going on off the field, not Texans to that degree, but you don't need those kind of distractions when your coach is coming back from COVID, when you've lost two of three, when your running back that's supposed to be, you know, one of the best running backs in football isn't performing like it, where now you're making excuses for your quarterback, but really taking your receivers and running them over with the bus. You know, you got enough going on that you're trying to get right. You don't need that guy doing that thing right now.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. When we return, 12 days of Texans Christmas. What are we hoping Santa brings to us as Texans fans? 713-780-ESPN. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Real fun sports. Razor sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, it's 12 days of Texans Christmas. What we hope you get for Christmas as far as it looks like from a Texans perspective. Our first few days have been good, I feel. First day of Texans Christmas, franchise quarterback. Second day, legal resolution to the Deshaun Watson saga. Third day, Jack Easterby must go. Fourth day, lose the next two, which might have to change the way that that's read here in the next couple of days. Fifth day of Texans Christmas, a trade down in the first round. And here it is. It's the anchor leg that we're driving in this three-man rotation. Joel, it's your turn. The sixth day of Texans Christmas. What are you hoping Santa brings to you?
I'm not going to wait. Make you wait till the 12th day to drop this massively important gift on your doorstep, people. It would be a change in ownership. Cal must go. In order for this team to be successful, I'm going to stay on the path I did with my first choice and continue down a path that will lead you to glory, a change in ownership. Whether forced to do so by mommy or otherwise, or just plain stupid enough, like all of his other decisions, to sell the team, you get what you've wanted and wished for the holiday season and the foreseeable future, and Cal is no longer in charge of your football team.
All right, there you have it. Change in ownership from the top. Cal McNair, no longer the owner, CEO, whatever the title is. He's gone as far as it goes with the Texans. Seventh day, or that was the sixth day, rather. Sixth day of Texans Christmas. That would be a miracle. That would be a Christmas miracle for sure.
It would miracle be a instead of 34th miracle. Street, miracle on Kirby. That's
miracle
what it would be.
Miracle on Kirby Drive. I mean, it'd be crazy for any NFL owner to sell a team, right? Like, how much money that they make. There's still growth potential there. Mm-hmm. TV contracts are going up and up. Texans aren't going to make a ton of money in terms of, like, the gate this year. They've sold a lot of tickets, but, like, merch, food, that sort of thing. Like, there's still room to grow, I think, for the Houston Texans in terms of finances.
Oh, no question about it. With more and more with the gambling and fantasy getting involved, there's more profitability to be had by the league, by the teams. A couple of years ago, we weren't in that boat, but now we're selling sponsorships on jerseys and practice gear. And with the opportunities for them to open up their eyes and realize the untapped potential of the gambling world, yeah, there's a ton to be had. You really have to be Donald Sterling stupid,
yeah,
to actually be taken or stripped of the game changing money and financial potential of being an owner in professional sports, primarily in the Big Three these days, but especially in the NFL, where it is a cash cow that is of massive proportions that would be the grand champion at the rodeo this year and then some. That's why it's such a big Christmas, which it would be a miracle. Short of Jimmy Stewart coming back to be able to be the guy to tell you that Cal's selling the team, yeah, it would be the miracle on Kirby, and I'd love to see it happen because it's the one thing you can't get out from under. You think about this. Deshaun had said, it's either Cal or me. Well, at that time we said, look, unless you completely screw up as an owner, that's the one you. If you're a.
That's such a stupid thing to say. It'd be like saying, no, it's either Gal or me. Like, come on. Like, what are you thinking when you say something like that?
And the crazy thing is, look, if you're the star player on a team, you can get a coach fired, James Harden. You can get a general manager removed. I don't know who locally we could say did that, but I'm sure there's been multiple times when a GM's been removed because a player didn't
Mike
like
fires.
Him. Well, he didn't do it.
Technically
that was
true.
Indirectly true, yes. But you can't get an owner fired. Like, it's the most asinine thing you could possibly bring to the table, because there's nothing you can do about it, or the fan base or anybody in power, short of the owner going, well, if he said it, he doesn't want to work with me, let me sell the team. Well, yeah, actually, Cal might do that. But no one else would be dumb enough to do that. And so you're stuck. And then you see the multitude of dumb decisions and the way it's gone since his dad passed away, and the fact that you gave Bill O'Brien total control. But then you have to keep questioning, did you even see the DeAndre Hopkins trade before it went through? And would you have stopped it if you did? Because I don't think he did. I don't know that. There's just so much that you just keep going on a daily basis going, his press conferences alone,
you know what's
he's
ironic?
Gotta go.
You know what's ironic, though, about like the trade for DeAndre Hopkins to Arizona? Like, I want my owner to be passive. Like, I don't want my owner stopping any sort of trades. The problem, like, it's a little bit of talking out of both sides of your mouth. Because, like, I want Cal McNair to get out of the way. I want him to just give Nick Caserio all the control, let him go do his thing, put the faith in his hire. The other problem of that, though, is, like, you see something like that, now you kind of question the intelligence of Cal McNair. Like, this is something that's going on. This is a trade we're going to make. No pushback on that. Like, it's a little bit of a catch-22 there, because you can kind of stand in the way of a GM. Like, Jerry Jones, I think, is too involved.
Yep.
And, I mean, he does run the organization.
Dan Snyder evidently blew whatever they said in the draft a couple years ago to draft Dwayne Haskins. Mm-hmm. No matter who, he didn't care what anybody on the football side had to say about who was the top pick where they were picking. He said, I'm making the pick, and made Dwayne Haskins, who was the worst pick possible and is now a backup quarterback in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. See, I mean, like, sometimes the best owners are the ones that just stay away. They make really good hires. Like, I think Jim Crane's a terrific owner. He makes really good hires, and for the most part, he stays away. Does he, you know, meddle in Justin Verlander? Maybe. But for the most part, owners are the ones who just get out of the way. Hire good people, get out of the
way. Pick your spots.
Yeah, well.
Well, because Crane's got involved when he had to spend money to get Verlander in the first place to, you know, show what money he had to make moves at the deadline in the past, or support moves that were going to be financially affecting your bottom line. But he doesn't affect the day-to-day. He's not Mark Cuban. He's not traveling with the team, sitting behind the bench, yelling at officials.
See, like, if I was the owner, I feel like, I mean, I think highly of myself. I think higher of myself than probably most of our listeners. But I feel like I would hire somebody that's really good at their job. But then at the same time, if they made a trade where I thought it was just flat-out stupid, I would like to think I would put the kibosh on that, right?
That's what I'm saying when you say pick your spots, too. You want a guy that says, look, I hired you to do a job, but at a certain point, it's my job, because it's my money, to figure out, like, across the board, not even just on the field perspective, right? This could be a game changer for me in a negative way. If I give up the best receiver in football, obviously my football team takes a hit. I'm coming off a season in which I should have been in the AFC Championship game, and it was a complete disaster. From a media perspective, coming off of that, from a public perception, the last thing I want to do is come off of that, instead of adding players to this team to make them even better, to say, we're moving on from that, but we're going to be better. I'm making us even worse and making us more of a point at them and go, don't do that factor in the NFL. So you go along those lines. The Sage Rosenfeld story to me was the tip of the iceberg. Like, you can hear all the things, see all the things, have questions about all the things that Cal has done or not done. But when Sage tells you the story, and he has no reason to lie, and he was in the building every day, of the one time he wanted to actually see what Cal did, because it was really kind of, he was very inquisitive for a while, that he went up in the offices, saw the name on the door, saw no desk chair or anything resembling anything of a guy that was doing work, and saw a guy on the floor playing video games. That to me was where I was like, if at all possible, and I don't know if there's a miracle to happen, but this guy can't keep running this team.
No. I mean, it's a bad look. Text coming in, 713-780-3776. Aggie Matt saying, that's the only thing that would bring me back as a Texans fan. It'd be the most popular move the Texans could make. The problem is, it's the owner making the move, so it's a little hard to sell. But if you were to, like, have one singular move, and it's why it's a great Christmas wish list, right? It's why it's a perfect 6 day of Christmas, change in ownership, because I think you would finally have that buy back in. Like, Jeff Bezos is a name that's been thrown around. A texter mentioning that name, too, that he has interest in buying an NFL team. What savvy businessman wouldn't want to buy an NFL team? But if Bezos were to come in, he's obviously going to make decisions that are good for the public PR. Like, decision one would probably be fire Jack Easterby, because a good businessman knows that that would have positive PR ramifications. The other like side of that argument, though, like to play devil's advocate and just counterpoint that, mm-hmm. is that really the only thing that would bring a pocket of Texans fans who once were Texans fans that are currently disgruntled and not happy and maybe like Aggie Matt have completely jumped off? Like, if they start winning a bunch of games, if they're a Super Bowl contender with Cal McNair as the owner, with Jack Easterby as the director of whatever he's the director of, don't you feel like that would also bring back Texans fans?
I think it would, because I think winning cures everything in a lot of ways for a lot of people, whether it's right or wrong. And if the Minister of Offensive Behavior is still here while they're winning, it's a different story than dealing with everything they're dealing with watching this team on a daily basis and a weekly basis and all the off-the-field issues, but knowing that Jack's still there and is the easiest scapegoat to be responsible for everything, whether he is or not, just adds fuel to the fire of negativity. I think that it's a combo platter, which is why my first two wishes have both been related to the two guys that are most directly in most people's minds responsible for all of the missteps, whether it be hiring Cully and Caserio or one or the other, whether it be the direction, the lying to everybody, the media and the fan base that we're still a championship caliber organization and team, and that's what our goals and aspirations are. It's all those things tied into two guys, and I think that they're directly associated with one another. So if you get rid of one, if you get rid of Cal, Easterby's going to go. And otherwise, if Easterby goes, I think you get a portion of that fan base back. People can still deal with Cal as long as they feel like they have responsible, solid management in place that you can trust.
I think that you could get rid of – I think you could deal with Easterby, too, if he wasn't so visual. You know what I mean? Like, if you didn't see him kind of out of sight, out of mind, like, mm-hmm. if he's not on the sideline, if he's not sprinting from the 50 to the locker room, if he's not high-fiving dudes in the stretching drill, like, if he's just around, like, in an office and you never see him, I think you could forget that, especially if you're winning.
You know why I push back on that?
Why?
Because of this track record.
But if you're winning games, too.
But Jeremy, he's been directly associated with the Hopkins trade. He's been directly associated with Bill O'Brien. He's been directly associated with all the negativity that still resonates with Texans fans. Sure. That's why I don't think they could look past it.
Even if you go to a winning, Super Bowl.
Well, Super Bowl's a different story, right? Because they've never been.
Yeah.
And then the hype would be so high that maybe they got blinders on. That's all they're focused on. But even if this team starts winning, people aren't going to forget that they could have still been winning and never had to have this down period if not for Jack Easterby's association with a lot of dumb moves.
See, for me, there's two routes, because there are a lot of fans that have jumped off. We get told this every day. Aggie Matt, JD just texting in. I was a front row season ticket holder for over 10 seasons, starting from day one. I'm done with the Texans until they change ownership. That's a very popular viewpoint. Like, there's a high percentage of people in this city that are Texans fans or were Texans fans that have that thought. I think there are two routes to getting back to getting those people back on board, those fans back on board. One's the easy route, which is change of ownership, or if you don't want to do that, Jack Easterby needs to go. The second route is the long route. It's the hard route. I'm not even sure it's the scenic route. It just takes forever. And that's to start winning at a very high level to where you start to now can change your thoughts and condition your thoughts. Okay, this team is a winning team, even if Cal McNair is the owner, even if Jack Easterby is around. Now, that's a difficult sell. That's a very hard sell. That's going to take a very long time, and it's going to take winning at historic proportions that this team has never seen, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and I think that's it's a big ask to ask the team to do those kind of things and have that kind of production. And still, the bigger ask might be to ask the fan base to forgive them and forgive Jack Easterby and not continually look in the rearview mirror instead of how rosy the windshield might present itself. I think that he's done too much that has had too much of a lasting effect on Texans fans, no matter what the team does going forward, even with as successful as we're talking about, for them to look past Jack Easterby. He's still there. It's still a problem. And then you wonder how that affects agents, players, and with word of mouth, the way word travels about the way things have been with the culture of Jack Easterby's Texans stint. I think that it's just too much to overcome.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We can get into this conversation. If you have a viewpoint you want to weigh in on, we can do that. Also, when we come back, James Harden is in town tonight. One of the greatest Rockets ever. Do you boo him or do you cheer him? At the Toyota Center this evening, it's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about New Brakes because I believe in them. And because I have a personal experience with New Brakes, and it was fantastic. And many of the listeners, Aggie, Matt, and others, have come out and said, man, You were right on. They were fantastic. This is the way to go if you're going to fix your brakes. All you do is go to nubrakes.com, and you're going to figure out what me and so many of the listeners have already found out. It's the only way to do your brakes because, you know what? Saving time is saving money, and that's exactly where it starts, because instead of you going to a brake shop and being at the mercy of a mechanic and spending hours in a waiting room while they take their time fixing your brakes and also trying to tell you there's a lot more that needs to be done on your car, you don't have to. They come to you. They come to your work and your job, or they come to the house or wherever you might be, and while you're doing other things, multitasking, saving time, they're also saving you by doing your brakes. Skilled technicians, all they do is brakes. They use the same parts as all the other brake shops in town. Their prices are competitive with every other brake shop in town. But the big difference is you don't have to be dragged down by waiting on them. They're doing what they do while you're doing other things. You can be cutting the lawn. You can be watching a game. You can be in a meeting or checking up on emails at work. But they get the job done. It took less than 40 minutes here at ESPN 97.5 when they came to do my breaks while I was doing a show. They did fantastic work, and they can do it for you, too. You mentioned ESPN 97.5, save 10%, but save time, like I said, by going to nubrakes.com. That's newbrakes.com.
ESPN 97.5. All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Twitch is popping right now. Twitch.tv/ESPN97.5, talking about Kyle McNair, that he can never win. He can never bring in a general manager that can win. Who said it? I lost it here in the
nice
the chat.
Job. Way to reference it and then not have
it ready. Q said today proved he's just another Bill O'Brien. Talking about Caserio, cuts folks on emotion. See, I don't believe that. I have no problem with cutting Zach Cunningham. Like, if you look at it from an isolated incident today, like the fact that he's missed two, whatever, you've disciplined him twice, the fact that he's not very good in your system, like, I have no problem with cutting him today in the moment. I feel like you have to have a much more, like, broad point of view, a more global perspective on this. The thing that upsets me in terms of, like, Nick Caserio and the Zach Cunningham news today was that he didn't have the foresight, which good general managers have foresight, to not trade him in the offseason when he still had some sort of value. He has zero value now because he's not good in a 4-3. He has zero value now because he's overpaid. And he has zero value now because he's broken team rules twice. So I don't care that he got cut today. I care that you didn't trade him in the offseason.
He's quote-unquote damaged goods because until now you've got to do a lot of due diligence if you're any other team in the league just to consider adding him to your roster at any time, especially at this critical time for a lot of teams. But teams are going to do that. But you're absolutely right. I mean, when you brought it up, it's exactly what should have been the case with this team with so many different players. Justin Reed, if you know he's going to walk out the door, get rid of him before you get nothing for him and at least get something for him. So you can say, hey, thanks for your efforts while you were here when we drafted you. I mean, you look at the things they got for Roby, for Mark Ingram, for the guys that when they finally did, break down and make trades, we said you were doing Mark Ingram a favor by putting him on your roster this year just so that he could add value, show he could still play, and then you could get something for him. But what you got for him wasn't nearly enough, and in weeks to come, just a week later, less than seven days later, other teams needed running backs. You could have had a bidding war where you could have gotten more, but instead you took the furthest possible lowest pick you could get to help out the Saints, and you did nothing for your own franchise. That's the thing that scares me the most, is that I want to believe in Nick Caserio. And we go back and forth all the time on the positives and the negatives. But the thing is, the jury is still out. And maybe it's the Deshaun Watson move that once he makes that move, we figure out what we can really say about if he's competent or not and he's the right guy for the job. But there is a fear factor from a fan perspective of waiting for that shoe to fall.
What's a fair period of time to give an NFL general manager that you just hired with the rosters as a dumpster fire?
I mean, it varies situation to situation. Like we said with James Click, it comes down to, and maybe it's still out, but it comes down to your first major franchise changing decision or two, right? So from a standpoint of last season where everybody said they had to make a big run for the team standpoint, for the standpoint of keeping, the winning streaks alive and all the things that they were riding the wave of, to trying to put this cheating scandal behind you. But he made the right moves at the trade deadline that worked out about as good as they could have possibly worked out, stayed under the luxury tax, and made a run to get to the World Series. That was phenomenal. He still has one lingering over his head with Correa. No one blames him for Springer, but he might be judged more for the Correa and the aftermath of how you replace him or if you sign him as opposed to anything he did at the trade deadline, but it's coming. From a Rafael Stone standpoint, he had two major moves to make with Westbrook and Harden. He wants you to wait 10 years before you judge the Harden deal. No one's doing that. So right now, those aren't really good, positive gold stars in his direction. He found Jayshon Tate. He found Matthews. He had a heck of a good draft this last year with four 19-year-old players that may or may not all pan out, but he went for it in the right direction. So there's things where you're continually weighing those out to see how the rebuild goes. But the jury's still out on him, too. But you still have those two major moves that are going to be graded on a daily basis. I'm just saying, from a Casario standpoint, nothing like that. Nothing has been in his back pocket yet. Until the Watson move is made, I think he's still basically in good favor with Texans fans, no matter what Easterby and Cal are.
To me, it's 3 years unless you just see egregious incompetence. And you can see that sometimes. Like, for me, the minimum for every, like, GM hire, coaching hire, you need at least 3 years if you see it going in the right direction. Now, there's times where you can just see egregious incompetence. I think David Culley, egregious incompetence, where he doesn't need 3 years to show you what he is as a head coach. But Casario, absolutely. Casario, my biggest fear with him right now, and I have lots of them, talks a great game. The actions, not so much. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. James Harden and the Nets. I almost said Rockets. I did say Rockets. Mm-hmm. James Harden and the Nets are in town. The second leg of a back-to-back for Brooklyn. They were in Dallas last night. They're in Houston tonight. No Kevin Durant. No LaMarcus Aldridge. First time James Harden in the Toyota Center with fans. Do you boo James Harden or do you cheer for James Harden tonight if you're a Rockets fan?
It's crazy. Before I went to bed, I tweeted it out last night just to ask from a Twitter perspective. The number of responses I got and the fact that there were some that still said, hey, pay homage to the guy for what he did for the franchise when he was here, but the overwhelming was booing. And I think it goes back to me too. Look, I totally understand if you want to give him his due, I'd give him a golf clap. But I still have to give him his due because he was responsible single-handedly and was the centerpiece of that good run that they just went on. He also was single-handedly responsible for blowing up some teams that might have had more left in the tank. He was single-handedly responsible for saying, and this is the one that changed everything for me, I want out. And you know I've harped on this in the past, but this is why I would boo him.
After they gave him everything.
Yeah, I would boo him because they made every move you wanted him to make. They gave you every dollar they possibly could. They gave you the keys to the franchise for you and Mama Harden and all your boys for all those years. And the first sign that it wasn't going to be sunshine and rainbows, you headed out of town and said, I need out. I can't do this anymore. And for that reason alone, I would boo him.
I'd boo him too. I was never a big James Harden guy. Even at James Harden's peak, I didn't love James Harden. Like, I used to call him James Kardashian whenever he was dating was Khloe, right? That's the Kardashian mm-hmm, I'm getting. Mm-hmm. He had his jersey hanging in the rafters of strip clubs throughout town. I never felt like he was the guy on a championship-level team. He put up huge numbers in the perfect scheme for him, right? He was in a D'Antoni offense for the most of his time with the Houston Rockets, which catered to every single thing about him putting up numbers. I never felt like he was that winning player that would get you over the top. He came very close whenever Chris Paul pulled his hamstring and missed Game 7 against Golden State, but he never got you there. And the things that I'll always remember about James Harden, like in his time with the Houston Rocket, I'll always remember Game 6 of the Western Conference semifinals against San Antonio when he flat-out quit at home.
Refused to shoot.
Against the Spurs. Yeah, refused to shoot. It's very difficult to find anybody that spent any amount of time with James Harden to say something good about James Harden, and he didn't get you the championship. He never even got you there. And, like, came very close. His numbers are great. He's a Hall of Famer. But he also didn't get you over the top. He also was alienated a lot of folks and burned a lot of bridges.
Me.
And he flat out quit on the team more than once.
I know too much. I've experienced too much with him. But I'll tell you this too, because you're right. There's not a lot of people that say a lot of good things about him. And there's a lot of people that stomach him as long as they can because things are good on the win and loss ledger, but really can't stand him for who he is. But the thing that really got me the most was, and Dr. Dre on 290, shout out to you for this part of this, but the fact that it was one thing that they were trying to cater to him, I remember vividly because guys were bringing up when we had McHale on, when LaMarcus Aldridge torched him in the first two games of that series, and they hammered McHale for that. But Harden was awful in the first two games as well. And I remember vividly being on the sidelines at shoot-around in Portland, and Harden called McHale over. And when McHale came back, Les Alexander was sitting next to me. And Les said, "What was that about?" And McHale goes, "Unbelievably, he just said to me, we need some help. We need to go out and get a few guys." And he's like, "James, you do know the trade deadline's over. We're in the playoffs. We can't go out and get anybody." And he paused for a second, and he said, "Well, then I need more plays called for me because we need to do something to shake this thing up." And he's like, I'm thinking to myself, "James, you're shooting less than 30% right now. Yeah, I mean, we've screwed up because Aldridge has torched us, but you're not exactly on top of your game." That one got me. And then the fact that when they fired McHale, because as I know, and like I said, I know too much, but they had a 20-point lead against the Celtics early in the season. They lost that game. After the game,
out of shape Harden, too.
After the game, out of shape James Harden called a meeting for Les Alexander, Daryl Morey, and Tad Brown, and Gerson Rosas. Out of that meeting, Kevin McHale was fired because James didn't want him anymore. And at that point, that was the kiss of death for the rest of your franchise for the next foreseeable future. Because at that point, they essentially gave him the keys to the entire Toyota Center and everything that goes with it and said, "You're running things. We just have titles." And that's where it all went entirely wrong. Chris Paul, if you don't believe James and his theatrics in the press conference and the fact when he pushed him out, who knows what next year would have been. We've seen what Chris Paul has been over the last several years. The fact that they said whatever James says goes was a death sentence for this franchise, no matter how good they were in the regular season.
Even if they don't win it that next year, they don't trade Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook, which then turns into Russell Westbrook for John Wall, and you're still filling the ramifications of John Wall. Houston, how do you feel? If you're going to the Toyota Center tonight, if you were there, would you cheer or boo James Harden? 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. That and also, one thing James Click could do in free agency that would totally change my opinion of him. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.